Welcome back to The Look and Sound of Leadership, an ongoing series of executive coaching tips designed to help you be perceived in the workplace the way you want to be perceived. I'm Tom Henschel, your executive coach, and today we're talking about leading with political savvy. Part 1. Huy Minh was an art director in animation. Our initial coaching conversations happened when she was between jobs, but in short order, she was hired by a small animation studio to build an art department, establish systems, and create a pipeline of talent. The job, she said, was thrilling and scary. The thrilling part was that she absolutely knew she could do this. She was good at assembling talent and making work run smoothly. Creating an art department sounded like fun to her. The scary part was that money is always tight in production houses. She knew she would need to fight for resources. "But I don't usually win those fights," she said. "I'm not good at all that politics stuff." "Not good how?" I asked. "Well, some people tell me I'm too honest, but look, it's hard enough being a woman in this role, let alone an Asian woman. So sometimes when I speak up, I guess it sounds harsh. But what they don't know is that most of the time, I don't speak up at all. Or if I do, it's just awkward."
"Awkward?" I echoed.
"Yeah. Like at the last studio I was with, it was a total boys' club. Two other women were running departments, too. The three of us always felt we were swimming against the tide. And it felt worse to me because it's hard for me to speak up anyway. But I saw other people get what they need when I didn't. And it's not because I'm bad at what I do. It's like they all got some secret code that I never got. That's what's awkward. And I'm tired of it. So if playing politics will help me build a great department, I want to learn how." I asked, "Just so I'm clear, is that awkward part of you specific to that boys' club, or do you feel awkward a lot?"
"Oh, a lot," she said. "Sometimes I think it's because English isn't my first language. People tell me I speak fine, but I'm not always sure I say what I mean."
I asked, "Huy Minh, what exactly does playing politics mean to you?" She said, "It means doing whatever you have to do to win. I've said it to some of the women I mentor. To me, politics looks like a street fight in an alley at midnight. Bad things happen in politics. People get hurt in politics. But that's the price of admission. It would be nice if good work would speak for itself, but I don't think it does."
"Boy, do I agree with you, Huy Minh. I tell people that all the time. Good work does not speak for itself. We can argue whether it's fair or not, but no matter, it's true. It's the state of the world. Good work does not speak for itself. I don't know that it ever did."
"Do you think that's fair?" she asked.
"Fair? What's fair? Is a 24-hour cycle of the sun fair? It just is. Politics just are," she thought.
I asked, "Would you feel differently about politics if you substituted the word relationships? Instead of 'I hate politics,' would you say 'I hate relationships'? I don't think you would."
"Really?" she asked. "Those two words are interchangeable? Are you sure?"
"I think they can be. And when you do it, I think it changes how you feel about all this."
I have not found a sentence yet where it doesn't work, except it has to be about workplace politics. You know, it's completely different if the politics are like state or federal or global politics, then no, the words are not interchangeable." That made her laugh. "Agreed, that's not what we're talking about. So if I want to get better at all this, what do I need to know? Where do we start?"
I said, "Can I start by telling you what playing politics means to me?" "To me, playing politics means always having one thing in the back of your mind. Your career. Everything you do, every project, every report, every piece of feedback, every conversation, every email, all of it contributes to your career. Being a good steward at all times on behalf of your career, that's what playing politics means to me. When you act in the best interest of your future success, you are being political. And it's not a selfish, narcissistic thing to do, by the way. It is devoutly to be wished that you would act on behalf of your career. It would mean you have a vision of your future. People who have a vision of themselves in the future live with purpose. They put meaning in their work. They are easy people to follow."
Huy Minh said,
"It's funny. A friend asked me the other day what I want to be doing in 10 years. I wasn't really sure, and she wasn't either. And you're saying that if I knew, if I had a
10-year plan for myself at my last studio, I would have gotten the resources I wanted?
Well, that's an interesting idea, Hui Min. Maybe you would have. You could give it a shot here and see what happens.
She said, but even suppose I could do all this, it bothers me that when I win, someone else loses.
I said, so you should be the loser, just to be nice?
Yeah, right, she said. I don't want to be the loser anymore. Okay, so tell me what I need to know.
All right. When I think of politics, I think of it in two parts. The first part we've already talked about, relationships. Relationships are going to help you build a great freaking art department, which, of course, helps your career. The other part of politics is culture. The culture of your workplace is going to determine lots of things. The culture is going to show you how to do what needs to get done. And then relationships will help make it happen. Culture, relationships. She said, but let me ask you this. What about this kind of relationship? I see people suck up to people. They make all nice, and then they turn around and they say, you know, that person is a moron. What about that for playing politics?
I said, well, in my version, politics are positive and empowering. That kind of relationship is not. So in my version, that relationship wouldn't even fit the definition of politics.
She said, when I think about relationships, I think about being awkward. People's feelings get hurt in relationships. I keep my distance at work. I'm not unfriendly, but I'm not anybody's buddy.
I said, can I give you some ideas about relationships that might help you be more comfortable?
Sure, of course, she said.
Okay. So you're building relationships with intention, right? You want to build a great art department, right?
Right, she said.
So these three ideas are going to help your relationships when you're playing politics. They are two beliefs and one skill set. She said, really? You start talking about politics by talking about beliefs? I didn't expect that.
Why not? I asked.
Well, I don't know. You surprised me, that's all. Go ahead. I said, okay, we're talking about the relationship side of politics, right? I think it's great to get some help on this side because I don't think any of us are super skilled when it comes to this relationship stuff. Like you said, you know, what happens in my relationships? My feelings get hurt. People say no to me. People tell me things that are hard to hear. And that's with the people I choose to be with. But now I'm going to try and do all that stuff in the workplace? It can be scary. And that's when this first belief helps. This belief says, everything is going to be okay. If I consciously choose to make relationships that will help me build my department, no matter what happens, everything will be okay. People might get mad at me. People might not play fair. Bad things might happen. Nevertheless, everything will be okay because ultimately, this is all in service of my career, and my career is not fragile. Everything will be okay. That's belief number one. What do you think?
She took a breath. That is an optimistic view. I live with the idea that smaller is better. Keep your head down because otherwise everything will not be okay.
Oh, it's interesting, I said. So what will your department look like if you keep your head down like that?
She gave a wicked smile and wagged a finger at me. Oh, you want me to keep my head up, huh? You're not the first person who's told me that.
Okay, yes, I need to speak up more. I know. Okay, so what's the second belief?
I smiled and said, if everything's going to be okay, then you have no reason to stay silent. This belief says you have permission to speak for yourself.
She asked, how is that different from keeping my head up?
To me, this belief that I have full permission to speak for myself, it's about responsibility. It's about giving voice. If I want to build the best art department, and if I want to act on behalf of my career, I have to take full responsibility for everything I do, when I speak up, when I don't, how I phrase things. Am I reporting accurately? Can I communicate my ideas? This belief empowers me to use my voice and speak for myself. It is a very political thing to do.
Whew, she said, that sounds risky. Okay, we'll see. What's number three?
The skill set, I said.
What's that about? She asked.
Relationship skills.
If you're going to play politics positively, you're going to need to influence people. You'll be in weird situations. You're going to have to give tough feedback. You know, you'll probably get tough feedback. Whatever happens in your relationships, having good skills gets you a better outcome. So learn to listen. Learn about empathy. Learn about managing hard conversations. "You're killing me here, Tom," she said. "I grew up with a family that didn't do any of that. This is going to be tough. And we haven't even begun to talk about culture yet." My conversation with Hui Min about playing politics with the culture in mind is next month's episode of The Look and Sound of Leadership. I want to start this part of the show with a cascade of ideas. There are four ideas, four tiers. The first idea is about calibration. How are you calibrated when you hear the word politics? Are you like Hui Min? You know, do you picture a knife fight in an alley? Are you like me? Do you see politics as positive and empowering? I want to say if you're picturing a knife fight, people will experience you differently than if you are picturing something positive and empowering. I would ask you, is your image of politics helping you? Which leads me to the next tier of the cascade. Every day, in every way, you are acting on behalf of your career. It doesn't matter if you're in some huge corporation or a mom-and-pop shop. Your career should be your primary concern. Where are you headed? What's going to help you get there? Put yourself first, which pushes us right into the third tier. For many people, putting yourself first is difficult. Many people, often women, do not feel entitled to put themselves first. It's a struggle. I know, and I want to tell you something that I think you probably already know. When you hesitate to put yourself first, it is then not surprising that you get crowded out by everyone else who does not have your hesitation. Your hesitation does not serve your career. So remember the two beliefs. Everything's going to be okay. You have permission to speak for yourself. Put yourself first. Be bold. How would you do that? It takes you to the fourth and final tier, relationship skills. I have some specific tools I want to mention, but I want to start by saying this. Improving relationship skills is an investment in your career. Good relationship skills will help you be politically savvy. One tool for building relationships as a political tool, it's a book called The Secret Handshake, Mastering the Politics of the Business Inner Circle. It's by Kathleen Kelly Reardon. Reardon says that political savvy is, quote, an interpersonal skill that can never truly be mastered. Is that how you think of political savvy? As an interpersonal skill? I think that's fascinating. Reardon, in her book, does something wonderful. I love it. You'll hear it. She creates a chart that matches different political cultures with different political styles. So the political cultures are the company cultures that range from minimal to pathological, and that is her word, not mine, and the styles that each of us have in our political preferences go from purist to maneuverer. And she creates this grid that shows which styles would be just miserable in which cultures and where there's a great fit. I've always loved this chart. Years ago, we created our own version of it. I know many of you already have it. It's a really interesting way to look at yourself in relationship with politics. We have it in our Essential Tools bin. It's on the Essential Communications website, EssentialCom with two M's.com. The Essential Tools are now right on the homepage, so everything is getting easier and easier. Help yourself. It's a PDF called Political Style Chart. Or just look in the show notes. There's a link there. Before I finish this tier of the cascade, I want to bring you back to The Secret Handshake. It is a great guide for building relationship skills. She has specific conversations in there with scripts that you can learn. It's really, really helpful. Also, I just want to remind you, I think you probably know this already, that probably half the episodes of this show are about relationship skills. Listen,
I am walking proof that relationship skills can be learned. This show exists in service of that idea. So help yourself, look in the tool bin, take what's helpful, grow your relationship skills. Okay, that's the end of that four-tier cascade. I want to end with a story where the politics were like a six-month-long slow-motion car crash. It was not pretty. I will tell you every gory detail right after this month's gratitude. I want to open with a quick invitation. I am meeting one of my daughters and her fiancé in Japan over the holidays. It is going to be the first time in the country for all of us, and I am wondering, what should we absolutely not miss in Japan in December? If you have a thought about that, there's a link in the show notes. Shoot me an email. I would be grateful to hear from you. Gratitude to those of you who reach out to me all the time, and you tell me through your emails and messages through the website how much the show means to you. I am so grateful. Thank you. I'm glad to know the show's been helpful. That's why I do it. Thanks for telling me. And I am grateful to those of you who post reviews. There is such a steady stream of reviews every month. Really, thank you. It makes such a difference. This month, reviewers from Australia, Sim Melbs. From India, 123 Rack. Here in the U.S., J.D. Sudi and A. McGuire. And A. McGuire, you made me laugh because you said, shout out to Todd Thompson. And Todd, you're on the list again. So thanks to all of you. Really, I am so grateful. A story about politics. Once upon a time, there was a company that was a client of mine. They hired me a lot, and they paid their bills handsomely. These people were very nice and very smart. I got passed around at every level of the company, and almost without fail, I liked everyone I worked with. And one leader in particular, I was very close with, a woman named Dawn. I'd been Dawn's coach years before, then I'd coached her a couple more times as she was getting promoted, and now she was leading one of the biggest teams in the company. One way that I partnered with Dawn was facilitating her offsites, and Dawn was always fun to work with because she loved to give her teams experiences, and so it was creative for me to create things to do. So one year, I was going to lead the team in a game called Win As Much As You Can. This game is very revealing. It really tests how a team sees itself. Here's how it works. The bigger team gets divided up into four small groups. They are all told that their job is to win as much as you can. How will they do that? They are told there will be 10 rounds. In each round, each team simply has to declare an X or a Y. But how do they win as much as they can? Well, there's a payout schedule, for example. If all four teams display an X, every team loses a dollar. If all four teams display a Y, all four teams win a dollar. And then there are all kinds of combinations. For example, three Ys but one X, that one X wins $3, and all the Ys lose $1 each. So you can see there are many ways for groups to play win as much as you can. And it can be very revealing about what they think about the team. To complicate matters, the groups are not allowed to confer with each other except in rounds 5, 8, and 10. During those times, each group sends one person into the middle to strategize, to make agreements, and in those rounds, all the payouts are tripled or quadrupled. So, it's offsite day. It's after lunch, and we are about to play Win As Much As You Can, and Dawn comes up to me. She pulls me aside. And she tells me there has been a tragedy in the downtown office and she has to leave right now. And she pulls the team together. She cannot tell them exactly what has happened, but she apologizes to the team and she appoints one of her direct reports, a woman named Kim, to be team leader in her absence. Kim's choice felt really natural. Dawn was looking to promote someone into her chief of staff role, and it was pretty clear that Kim was going to get the nod. So Dawn goes away, Kim's in charge, the game begins, and it's going fine. And they are up to round 10, their final joint conference. Each of the four groups send one person in, one of whom is Kim. And they decide amongst themselves that for this last round, yes, they will all declare a Y, in which case they will all win $4, because it's a bonus round,
They will all put down why. So I'm there. I'm starting to write everyone's letter down. We go around the room, and Kim calls out X. And the room just explodes. I mean, it was amazing. Her group members were furious at her. They had not given her permission to do that. And everyone else in the room was furious. Kim had made a public promise to help the team, and then, you know, she turned around, broke her promise to benefit herself? And she was acting as the de facto leader of the team? Is that, like, who we are as a team? Oh, they were livid. And Kim digs into her position. She's saying, you know, she was just doing what the game demands, win as much as you can. And she's yelling at the group, don't we want to be winners here? We should want to be winners. And I am thinking, whoa, this is not good. I have three thoughts in mind. One is, I think Kim just committed political suicide. I cannot imagine what she was thinking. And my second thought was for the team. This team just took a body blow that could tear a team apart. And I know they are going to need a lot of help right now, immediately, and in the future. And I feel very responsible. And my third thought is about Dawn. I know Dawn does not like drama. And boy, oh boy, this is big time drama. I am pretty certain this turn of events is going to disappoint her. I am concerned that I am going to disappoint her. Slowly, I guide the team back into some state that isn't so agitated, and I stand in front of the team, and I make them a promise. I say, this will have a chance to play out, but not now. Now, there's one more activity that's been set up for you. It's a physical activity. It's going to be really fun. Go do that. Let this be, and we will deal with this. And they did, and I got in my car and drove home. And I'm in my car, and I am asking myself, as a facilitator, what could I have done to create a better outcome? Like, that was not good. Could I have done anything, or was I just like, you know, some poor schlub on the curb on a rainy day who gets splattered by a bus? I mean, was there anything I could have done? I was not sure. But here's what I did know. I knew that I was suddenly in a political minefield. It would not surprise me if I never facilitated another offsite for Dawn or for anybody else at the company. And I did not want that to happen. I did not want to lose them as a client. So I was going to look out for my career, and everything that I did next was, for me, political. How I communicated with Dawn was political. What I proposed to her was political. Luckily, Dawn fully supported that promise that I had made to the team in the spur of the moment. Yes, this whole incident would have a chance to play out. It wasn't her preference, but she made a lot of space for people to talk about their feelings. And she invited me to conduct individual sessions, small group sessions. She and I had sessions, and I was happy to do it, and I never billed for a minute of my services. Here's what I saw. Kim's reputation never fully recovered. She wasn't penalized, but she did not get the chief of staff role. Someone else did. Dawn's team, for the most part, got back to being high-performing. There were some scars, but really, everyone was ready to move on. And for me, after about 18 months, my work at that company tapered away. Nothing unpleasant happened. It was just this slow kind of shutting off of the faucet. And look, I was grateful. It had been a very, very, very long run. It was a pleasure. I learned a lot. It was great. But it was over. And then, just a couple years ago, much to my surprise, another leader from that company, a peer of Dawn's, asked me to facilitate an event for his team. And I wondered, maybe my curse is lifted. I don't know. So what's the point of this story? I hope that as you think about being politically savvy, that you will take away 3 points to this story. One is about Dawn. Dawn understood, if relationships don't heal, the culture will suffer. Dawn did something that was not comfortable for her. She had people talking about their feelings. It was a very savvy move on her part. So that's lesson one. Sometimes political savvy is uncomfortable. Yes. Move on. The second point, Kim. Kim was never able to see the impact she was having on her relationships or on the culture. She was politically tone-deaf, and her career suffered as a result. Lesson number two, when everyone is telling you something, it is in the best interest of your career to open up and listen. The third point of the story is something that I learned. You know, I've often asked myself, could I have stopped Kim from breaking her promise? Ultimately, I've decided, no, I really couldn't have. It wasn't in my control. But I also asked myself, don't her actions affect my career? And the answer is, yeah, they did. Is it fair? It does not matter. The only choice I get is how I'm going to respond. And that's the lesson. Don't react. In political situations, don't react. Choose. Be intentional. Increase your self-awareness. Increase your self-management. It is all the things that every episode of The Look and Sound of Leadership is about. If being political is of interest to you, this episode is in the podcast library in three categories: self-talk, leadership, and for women. I'm really trying to address the belief side of being politics on this. Five episodes you might listen to: Agreeable Disagreement, How to Stay Calm Under Fire, Pursuing a Promotion, something political, Tough Conversations, and I Hate Politics. This is an episode from 2008, from the very beginning. Much of my thinking has evolved since then, but some has not. I thought it was really interesting to listen to. Okay, that's it for me. Until next time, I'm Tom Henschel. Thanks so much for listening.